Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The name of the program is World Watchers. It's broadcast number 598. Whoops, take that back. 698. Missed 100 there. April 22nd, 1985. Last week I was talking about the commotion that was just building up with Ronald Reagan's intention to put a wreath in the cemetery of the graveyard that was the staging area for the Battle of the Bulge. And I cited some good Nazis that are still alive, but he said that hardly anyone over a certain age of 50 or 55 remembers the war, that most of the people were young there, and the others are too old and senile. Well, in the past 7 days, you've heard a lot of commotion, a lot of talk shows, a lot of memories, a lot of hurt feelings, analysis, criticism of his going there, questioning why he's doing it, even Senator Robert Dole saying he hopes that he doesn't do it, high officials like George Shultz suggesting that maybe it's wrong to be making this trip to that particular graveyard. And there has been so much in the news, I'm sure your papers, wherever you live or whatever you wherever you see the programs, you've heard at least a fraction of the controversy and know how much there is going on. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details of the debates that are taking place. I was going to at first, but I'm going to let the heat cool off for a while. Personally, I think it's just fine that he's going to that particular graveyard at Pittsburgh. For years, I've studied the Battle of the Bulge. I've shared it with those listeners that follow it every single week. Whenever there's a crisis in the news, people pick up the radio and listen to Kazoo to see what Mae Brussel's saying, and then when they're satisfied with that, they go back to their kind of complacency. But I don't think many people are going to be very complacent in the weeks and months and years ahead. Those that listen every week, as I say, know that I have particularly delved into the Battle of the Bulge, the people who participated in it, the American team, the Hitler team, the betrayal at Arnhem, which preceded the Bulge, the slowing down there. That book was given to me by David Emery, and that turned me into an investigator of the Arnhem massacre prior to the Bulge, because it involved Prince Bernhard, the husband of Queen Juliana of Holland. He was member of Hitler's youth, the SS. Also, he was part of the Hitler Nazi organization, and then he worked for IG Farben. And when the Queen took her children, his children, out of Europe for the duration of the war, he stayed behind, in quotes, to work with the resistance. But during that period, and of course after the war with Klaus Barbie and the Americans, he was really working with the people who were betraying the resistance, and all the evidence points to that. Otto von Bolschwing from Holland, who came to the United States, and so forth. They were betraying the people and the resistance, and stalling that particular battle to stall the Battle of the Bulge, to get ready to take and out of Europe the profit and the art and the gold and everything that Hitler had accumulated, but they didn't get it out on time. Now, for years, I've also at the same time shared my research on Ronald Reagan, that brilliant book, The First California, the First Parafascist State, I've quoted many times. I've been on the air 14 years, and I have been a continuous Reagan watcher for all of those years. And I don't know when I first got interested in of course, when he was governor, those 8 years. But it's wonderful to see a noose going around Ronald Reagan's neck and sinking him on what he calls a heroic gesture or a debt or a request of President of Germany, Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of Germany. Richard Nixon left the presidency. He gave a lot of people trouble through the McCarthy hearings, through the Alger Hiss case, the Rosenberg prosecution. He began his political career in Washington in 1946. It started in the Navy when the Navy was bringing over through Project Paperclip the Nazis, the same Nazis that are going to get Ronald Reagan's nose rubbed into his past because of what he's insisting on doing now. Now, Nixon was removed because of a little piece of scotch tape, a paper at the Watergate Hotel. Not the anti-war protesters, not the politicians, not the left, certainly not the Ted Kennedys or the Mondales or the Hubert Humphreys that were around. A little piece of paper, supposedly left, they believe, by James McCord, did the trick. Now, this time, the Teflon will be broken with a wreath, a few flowers, at the staging place of the Battle of the Bulge, and Ronald Reagan will combine the forces that I have studied, those elements, and, as some people are saying on television and writing, the Teflon may finally be pierced, And you know when Teflon pierces, then the utensil that has been used is not of the same value. You get poisoning and so forth, and you have to throw it away. Now, what was so important that he has to dance the tune of Helmut Kroll? Kroll insisted after it was a celebration, if you can call it that, the cemetery, after the Normandy invasion last June of 84, he insisted on wanting to be included at that party. Have you ever known people personally that just have to be there or they're insulted? Well, one article this week said that he was being very spiteful and that he arranged this meeting with the president at this particular time and date so that he would be included, and he's been planning his inclusion since November of 84. He flew to Washington, and we talked about those. So now that these forces have met together, the Battle of the Bulge, Germany, the current Germany, the past Germany, and Ronald Reagan, the world can start researching more carefully and the Nazi-fascist connections of both of these men to their past, and the entire era will become open sesame for people to study from now on. Now, I sent a letter to our dear president today, one of the overnight special deliveries in the little blue packet, and enclosed was a bibliography source material to the letter, and then I sent out 55 letters to members of the news media, only our particular congressman and senator from California, Senator Cranston, and Leon Panetta, because Representative Panetta knows that I've been doing this research, and I sent this out to Washington, D.C., and I made it very simple, like a C. Dick and Jane textbook, because Ronald Reagan has a very simple mind, and he only understands a few sentence structures, particularly when there's something he doesn't want to know. So I wrote this letter with little boxes, one sentence and then a box, and another sentence and a box, and a third sentence, and a little, each of these boxes has a name. And then down below at the bottom of page one is a picture of Fritz Kramer at the Pentagon getting his award in 1970. And page two has a picture of Fritz Kramer in the Dachau trials in 1946. I wrote, "Dear President Reagan, the most important and pressing issue on your mind seems to be getting the Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative, approved by Congress and our allies." And that is that little box. It says Star Wars. "German Chancellor Helmut Kroll will visit to push your Star Wars. He will help you, rather, push your Star Wars. So President Ronald Reagan must exchange favors. There is more to this story, and it goes back to the Battle of the Bulge. The most visible spokesman for the Star Wars is Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, former Chief of Defense Intelligence Agency." And then there's another little box, "Lieutenant General Daniel Graham. Lieutenant General Daniel Graham shares office space, or did last year, with the most invisible man in Washington, D.C., Fritz Kramer. Kramer was plans officer for the Pentagon for over 35 years, through the Korean War, the Vietnam War, Chilean coup, and other battles." Little box, Fritz Kramer. If he sees Star Wars, Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, and Fritz Kramer. Every biography and autobiography about Henry Kissinger credits Fritz Kramer for being his mentor. Kramer, a German, with his wife and new baby living in Nazi Germany during World War II, took Kissinger under his U.S. intelligence role, where their activities began during the Battle of the Bulge. Kissinger is never out of office. Kramer's picture below was obtained from the Pentagon. This was taken in 1970. No person in America has seen his face in articles, books, magazines, or knows his name. Before you leave for Germany to honor the Waffen-SS at Bitburg Cemetery, I want you to hold a press conference in the White House on Friday. Bring Fritz Kramer with you to be seen and photographed for the entire nation, for the entire world, side by side with you. He had a press conference, I'll go into it in a few minutes, in March, the middle of March, with Henry Kissinger, who gets the most attention of any person in the United States. I went on at that time, have FBI Director William Webster fingerprint Fritz Kramer in public, and make comparisons to another Fritz Kramer who was located in the same places during the Battle of the Bulge as Henry Kissinger and his mentor. Both Kramers worked for the same people during and after the war. And page one has a picture of the so-called American but German-born Fritz Kramer at the Pentagon. Page two. Adolf Hitler had a general, Fritz Kramer, who was as invisible to the world before and after the Battle of the Bulge as United States America plans officer Fritz Kramer. I have collected over 2,000 books on World War II, the Battle of the Bulge, the Malmedy Massacre, and the Ardennes Offensive. Little box on this page. Malmedy Massacre, 19,000 Americans killed, in quotes, no prisoners, kill on sight. That's what the Germans were to do. Adolf Hitler's top elite SS stormtroopers all converged at the Battle of the Bulge to meet American army officials who would, in quotes, take care of them, end quotes, until they started working for CIC, United States Army Intelligence. General Fritz Kramer, Otto Skorzeny, and Sepp Dietrich were Adolf Hitler's most important men to assure a 1,000-year Reich, and I gave 5 books as references out of many hundreds, thousands, several thousand. Hitler's Last Gamble by Nobicourt, 1967. Damned Engineers by Janis Giles, 1970. Skorzeny by Charles Whiting, 1972. Henry Kissinger by H. Blumenfeld, 1974. Kissinger and His Rise by D. Hanna, 1974. Little box, General Fritz Kramer, Otto Skorzeny, and Sepp Dietrich. And then I went on, 74 of Hitler's elite were charged with long or life sentences for the Malmedy massacres, including Kramer, Dietrich, and Skorzeny. The first political act of new Senator Joe McCarthy was to make sure all charges were dropped so that these men could be set free. Adolf Hitler's gold, cash, diamonds to fund the Odessa, the 1,000-year Reich, was in the hands of Skorzeny and the United States CIA shared offices in Madrid, Spain. The picture below is from the trials at Dachau in 1946. Kramer, Dietrich, and Skorzeny. And under that, Otto Skorzeny, the Odessa funds, the CIA offices, and the Nazi gold. Then down below, I have a little message for the president and people that I sent this copies of this to. Mr. President and members of Congress, the press, and concerned citizens, if there is any error in my questioning that Hitler's Fritz Kramer and the Pentagon Kissinger Haig Fritz Kramer are not the same person, it was an honest mistake. I have spent 2 years trying to put these pieces of the puzzle of America, world fascism, together. Is it a mistake or coincidence that the present president of Germany, Richard von Weizsäcker, is the son of the infamous Baron von Weizsäcker, liaison of Adolf Hitler to Pope Pius XII, or that Baron worked with the Vatican for final plans of United States entry into the Battle of the Bulge? Then final sentences, a couple of them. The world is dying, bleeding, arming, killing, escalating, making coups, assassinations. Please call a press conference before you leave for Bitburg. Bitburg and Ronald Reagan will go down in history. Your fate is sealed, Mr. President. My 21 years research came together last week. The SS Gestapo and the United States President honoring the most brutal forces planet Earth ever experienced. And signed it, May Brussels. And then included with that letter, it's on 10 by 14 paper. It's a large, it looks like a poster. I put on the largest size of the copying machine and included a bibliography with where Henry Kissinger's Fritz Kramer was during the war and how he came to this country and the dates of Ronald Reagan working with Errol Flynn when Flynn was in the Gestapo. Ronald Reagan's career, Klaus Barbie working with Henry Kissinger, John J. McCloy releasing the Nazis, and just put a chronology of some important dates, about 15 or 16 important years, and I put the bibliography of the books that I suggested reading for these sources, a background on Hitler's Kramer, the missing pictures of each of them, of our Kramer in the United States, who was German and still is German, and the other Kramer who worked for Adolf Hitler but disappears in 1948 and is never seen or heard of in any history books, although the other people are. Now, last weekend I went to San Francisco, this last Saturday, and wanted to participate in the marching down Market Street because I think it's very important that people take part in these things. There was a large demonstration in Washington, D.C., and the interesting thing was how many different groups participated and seemed to get along and had to express their feelings about what is going on all over the world. And the one common denominator between all of those things is Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger, who make the policies for all those activities. So I made up several hundred sheets with pictures of the Fritz Kramer in Dachau trial and the one in the Pentagon. It's a little bit different than the one I sent to the president and members of the press today. And I passed those out, and a friend of mine helped me pass them out. I've known her many years. She was a victim in a concentration camp. Her parents had been killed, both of them in concentration camps. She never has listened to World Watchers and never took what I was doing seriously. And I think last week she began to believe that maybe there was a little bit of truth in what Mae Brussels has been trying to tell whoever wants to hear it for quite a long time. So she helped me hand out pamphlets in San Francisco and explain and talk to different people about what the Battle of Bulge meant, what these people were doing, and the importance of finding out if, in fact, Hitler's general has run our Pentagon. If I'm wrong, I have nothing to lose, but I've spent too much time and too many years collecting information that I actually do believe this is the same one. If not, I and you, all of us, have a right to know. Now, this one of the newspapers that was handed out at the demonstrations, it was here and it was also in Washington from the Workers' Vanguard, a large article, The Contra-Nazi Connections, dated April 19th, 1985. And it goes into John Singlaub and the Special Forces and the secret private armies, the privatization of war, the illegal use of these small mercenaries that came home from Vietnam, and information about how our CIA operatives are similar to the Free Corps of Weimar Germany, and the core of this being John Singlaub of the World Anti-Communist League. Now, I've done three broadcasts on that, and I'm going back and refurbish your memory and do some more in a few weeks when some of these other news stories do slow down or blow over. Well, I don't think they will from now on. I think it's open season for a lot more investigation. But this long, long article is about the origin of the World Anti-Communist League and starting in Taiwan with Chiang Kai-shek and the links to Reverend Moon. And it's very important, and it sounds for all the world like World Watchers. And I'm sure that the people who wrote it have worked with the same people who are sharing information with me. But the main thing is that hundreds of thousands of these were passed out in both cities. And I got phone calls from different cities saying that people had these articles, and they were happy, not happy that the news was so bad, but pleased that what they've been hearing from me on World Watchers and maybe picking up a few isolated stories is finally coming together and getting out in the streets, and that people can study it from a historical context, that Singlaub has a history, that Robert K. Brown has a history, that Soldier of Fortune have a history, that it is people that make the difference, just as the former presidents of Argentina are just been charged today for murder and conspiracies. That's what I think we should do in this country. I've said it before. Once you remove those men, if you can call them men, and you bring in another president who is not inclined to have the missing children, the torture, the brutalities, then the whole tone of the country changes. Once they get rid of Pinochet in Chile, the pressure will be off there. And people do make a difference. These aren't historical trends. They are particularly mean people that set the tone of the country. You can see the difference between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. People would say Carter was undecisive. That was a media blitz. But the pressure with Ronald Reagan on is every day there's a new surprise, a new appointment, a new decision, a new invasion, new anger and bad-mouthing and refusing to sit down and talk about situations. People make a difference, and the interesting thing is this article was filled with so many names of people that I know make a difference. Now, for those of you that attend demonstrations in the future, can't do anything about the past, there are certain ways to protect yourself. It's been a long time since I've done this, since the Vietnam period. It sort of slowed down after Watergate and Nixon began to be investigated, and the Vietnam War was over. And I let my guard down. I was going to take a camera. Thought it was too heavy to pack because I had all these pamphlets to hand out and didn't take it. Always take a camera. I used to do that when we were at Fort Ord with the Presidio trial. When somebody came and took our picture, I took his picture, and it was invaluable to show that these agents were photographing you, and you can use it if you want later for lawsuits or whatever. John Reese, the famous agent provocateur who now is running and has been Western Goals, was photographed by people as a street provocateur during the Vietnam War, and smart people who had cameras could take pictures of him taking pictures, and this is what you have to do. Now, we went on a bus, a chartered bus, and I assumed that we would be in a parking lot where it would be filled with a lot of chartered buses. They said, be sure and identify your bus number 1069, because there are so many there, and with 50,000 people or so, you can believe that you would expect a sea of buses. But, and we were supposed to be at a certain corner at 3:30. Well, I was at that place, and another lady was there, and then two others came, and there was no place for a bus to pull up. He just pulled up on the curb, and we got on. There was only one bus, and it was our bus. I don't know where all the others went, but ours was at one place, and we were waiting in front. And I was talking to this lady, and I looked up, and a man was there taking my picture. And it took me by surprise, because we weren't in the middle of anything. There was no street theater. There wasn't anything interesting going on. And he wasn't dressed, disguised as the kind of person that usually they melt into the crowd. They don't look super straight. He had a blue suit and, you know, black or blue shoes. And just standing there with that camera aimed at me, and I almost yelled. I didn't do that. I just looked at him like, what are you doing? So he took the lens and then turned it to the woman to my right as if, well, I won't bother with you. But with a wide-angle lens, he could have, you know, a full distance of a block on each side. And I just looked at him, you know, really hard. I was angry because there were just a couple of us, and there was absolutely no reason, except for 2 hours I'd been handing out these papers and talking to over 100 people about Kramer and Kissinger, going down Market Street, walking for 2 miles. Every time there was a signal, I'd stop and give out more, 2 hours before the march. And I was looking at him very angrily, and he looked at me before he left, and he just said, well, all good things have to come to an end. Now, I don't know what that means, whether he means we had a nice day or whether he means I have to come to an end. He was arrogant, and I almost ran up the street after him, and I didn't. But the point of this story is that these people are right there. They're right on your tail. I had a lot of time to talk about Kissinger and Kramer, and I admit it's dangerous, but I admit they're dangerous, and I took my chances. Now, there were a lot of articles about Helmut Kohl and forcing the Star Wars. Reagan wants to pay the debt back, of course, and go to the cemetery. One was U.S. officials criticized British Foreign Secretary because he made a statement against the Star Wars proposal or questioned it, and our famous Richard Pearl, this U.S. Secretary, Assistant Secretary of Defense, chewed him out and said, how can you dare publicly to talk about the Star Wars? But publicly, Helmut Kohl is pushing the Star Wars. There was several stories last week. Kohl calls Star Wars necessary. Stop short of taking a direct role, but it's necessary. And he's the spokesman, whereas the Washington Post and the London Times and other newspapers are questioning, some of the people are asking questions about Star Wars. And Weinberger has given a 60-day ultimatum to the Europeans that they have to go along with it. Now, not only is the Star Wars something that has not even been discussed fairly, it's been exposed as a first strike for World War III, but along with Mr. Fritz Kramer's partner, Daniel Graham, and Edward Teller pushing this, there's always Henry Kissinger lurking in the background, and he had press conferences about be hard on the Russians, don't rush into a summit, and so forth. A writer from this is from the Kansas City Times, picked up a story by Sandy Grady, sent to me by a subscriber on Dr. Kissinger. And this is why that letter I wrote to the president and the media, I think, is very, very important, is that some people are catching on to the celebrity status of Kissinger without understanding why. And he has the ultimate power in Washington, he and Kramer and Daniel Graham and Edward Teller, so that the Allies either have to go along or shut up or publicly be scolded like a bunch of children if they don't say, yes, Caspar Weinberger, you're great, we'll do anything you want, spend anything you want. Now, this story says Dr. Kissinger's still on call. And it says celebrities come and go at the White House, but all of a sudden there were TV cameras looming. There was a mystery guest. Who would it be? They couldn't imagine. None other than the important Henry Kissinger himself. Henry Kissinger was having lunch with the president. And it tells about Henry Kay, the one-time star of such epics as Chile, Vietnam, Cambodia, the Doonesbury comic strip, the man with whom Nixon prayed in the White House rug. No wonder hearts beat like trip hammers. And it tells about the television reporters all getting ready for Kissinger staking out the lights and treating him like a superstar celebrity. He had lunch with the President of the United States. That was on Wednesday, March the 14th. And just a day later, about 2 days later, the President of Brazil had what was supposed to be appendicitis that ended in his demise. And I'm going into that today, a little more about that. But Kissinger has lunch with the president first. There's a picture of them eating lunch, the two of them at a table, both grinning, a very important meeting on this particular Wednesday, and then reported, and he meets the reporters as if, I have nothing to hide, all the cameras are going. And this article by Sandy Grady says, Kissinger goes before the camera, and it was just like the old days, where he would go to foreign capitals as the prime minister of the world. Nothing changes. Henry the K still dominates the stage. The Kissinger phenomena never stops. At 62, 8 years out of power, he's a kind of shadowy secretary of state. Books, including his own, bicker about his own role in the overthrow of Chile, the widening role of Vietnam, Richard Nixon's wiretapping, and other dark episodes. But who cares? In America, diplomats who make mistakes wind up as tenured professors or wealthy and famous like Henry Kissinger. He's a star, all right, the hottest money-making machine since Gone with the Wind. A Kissinger lecture costs $20,000. If you're a member of his corporation, 15 or 20 corporations who hire him as a consultant, you pay $150,000 a year. His books sell 500,000 copies. There's no demand for Dean Rusk, William Rogers, Cyrus Vance, or Al Haig. Who is Dr. K that such a magnet for money or clout can be drawn by Henry Kissinger? And, of course, I believe that the magnet is the actions that he's done, whether it was Guatemala or Iran, for Chase Manhattan, for the Defense Industry Security Command, for the OSS, the CIA, his links to Otto Skorzeny, to Klaus Barbie, to the top Nazis. He knows all these stories, and he is used on NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN. He is Mr. Media. He is Mr. Bloodbath. And that, again, is why it is so important to find out about his mentor. What gives Henry Kissinger the power through every administration, in and out, to do the things he is doing? Now, I've talked about the last week, I mentioned some good old Gestapo members, SS Gestapo and Waffen-SS, and I'll do more about their meeting. They're having a meeting, a reunion, an annual reunion while Ronald Reagan is there, just to add a little guilt to the little, pad the lily a little bit. They have to have a simultaneous reunion to call attention to themselves, and this meeting will give them the approval to go on and arm and rearm their children and their grandchildren. And I want to talk about some other Nazis that came out in the news this week that I'm sure you saw, but I want to share them with you. There's just one item from the New York Times in the religious section, April the 6th, I want to bring out before the first half hour of this program is over. It says in big black letters, Christianity is blamed for Nazi Holocaust. A Church of England bishop said in a recently published article that Christianity must take a major share of the blame for the Nazi attempt to exterminate the Jews. John Baker, Bishop of Salisbury, one of the church's leading theologians, said that Christianity spewed out anti-Semitism from the earliest times. Now, that's what I was saying about Helmut Kohl. If he wants to forget the past, how the Jews still bear the brunt of the crucifixion of Christ, that is what is happening. And he said, no matter that Jesus was a Jew, that thousands of Jews formed the first Christian churches, that the Jewish scriptures constituted for nearly 200 years the only Christian Bible. The Jews were those who had rejected and killed their Son of God, they were told, and into that indictment Christians could funnel all their hatred and humiliation they themselves felt at having been rejected by Judaism. That is coming out of England, a particular pastor who has figured it out, that if you want to forget and forgive, you better go back to what are the origins of your hatred of the Jewish people, and it comes from the Christian religions that have then taught it to the Muslims and arm the Muslims and encourage Jews to have Israel as their homeland and push the Arabs out and not participate in finding homes for the Arabs so that they also would hate the Jews. The Muslims and the Jews used to get along. They're both Semites, and they did used to get along before Hitler, before the war, the Grand Mufti of Hitler, before the Western cultures split them apart. We'll take a one-minute break and then go back to some very important new Nazis in the news, and then I want to talk about the death of the president of Brazil.